name, date of birth, and your background, please.
Okay, my name is Horace Patterson. I was born April 11, 1947. My background is varied. Do you mean as a, as far as education or what?
Education or going for a death if you want.
Okay. Okay, I grew up in the Bessemer, Birmingham area. Graduated from high school in 1965 during the turbulent 60s. I went into the United States Air Force at the time of the Vietnam era conflict. After that, I went to school at Southern University and then to Talladega College and later to Jacksonville State University.
You said you participated in the Vietnam War. What does that mean to blacks that fought in the war?
Oh, that certainly weren't. There were an awful lot of blacks that fought in the Vietnam War. You know, we call it a war now. At that particular time, they called it a conflict, but it was very much a war. And it was a situation that we felt that we could not win. And of course, we were rather apprehensive about it because in going to Vietnam at that particular time and all of the civil rights issues existing, it was like we're fighting for freedom for some people, and yet it was not something we fully enjoyed ourselves.
How did the war affect the U.S.?
The war at that particular time was a very divisive thing in this country. There were people who felt very strongly both ways. Some felt we should not be there at all. It was a time when you know, there was a lot of rebellion, not just the civil rights issues, but a lot of coarsening of traditional values and that kind of thing. So, and there were those who felt it was the patriotic thing for us to do.
How do you feel about blacks defending their country and having to return to the U.S. with all the prejudice and unequal?
Yeah, well, it's it has always been a very difficult task. I think W.E.B. Du Bois talked about the two-ness that we face as African Americans. That first of all, we are, whether before we are even Americans, we're black, and we have to fight for things that other people take for granted. But it has been our history as African Americans is that this is the only home we have, so we have been extremely loyal to this country.
As a young man, how did you handle the 60s?
There were times where that's a very good question. It's a very good question, and I think there were times I handled it and it handled me. The 60s was a time of great turmoil, great change in this country. I grew up and I really lived through the colored and white fountains and having money in your pocket and you couldn't go to the front door and having to go to the back door, separate toilets, the whole nine yards. It was a time of excitement for those of us who were young at that particular time because we believed that things could change and we happened to live through it. Dr. King was an exciting and mesmerizing leader, and I was one of those folk very fortunate to be able to be in some of the marches with him.
Did you ever think that there was no hope for blacks?
I have never thought that there was no hope. I have always believed in hope because of my strong Christian background. Even as a child, I was taught to believe that things can change and that God is real, and things do not always change as fast as we want them to, but they can change. There are some areas that have been very, very tardy as far as I am concerned, and that is, you know, opening of opportunities in the corporate world, opening of opportunities at management and all of that kind of thing, business opportunities for blacks to be able to own businesses in this country. It's still easier for a black person in America today to buy a car than to buy a home. And there's something desperately wrong with that kind of thinking.
Where were you when Martin King Jr. was assassinated?
When Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in 1968, I was in the United States Air Force Station at Goose Bay, Labrador. And I will never forget that day. It was heart-wrenching. We just couldn't believe it. We were far from the States, and it was just a very, very sad day, even though we were hundreds and hundreds of miles away from America.
How did the whites take it? Were they glad? Or?
Because we were pretty close-knit in the Air Force at that particular time at that station, we didn't see any of the so-called celebration that some people claim that there were whites who did. I'm sure there were some who did, but not at that particular base. I don't recall any incidents like that.
Definitely in the 1960s, not to mention the South, did you ever have an encounter with the Ku Klux Klan?
No, I never did personally. I think I did have contact with members of the Ku Klux Klan, but not the organization with the hoods and that kind of thing. Of course, in the marches, you would always have various whites tell you, call you boy and tell you that you could get in a lot of trouble and somebody might come by to see you at night and all of that kind of thing. But we never actually had them to do the rioting and that kind of thing.
After years of fighting, what do you think finally made people realize that separating blacks was wrong?
I think it was a combination of things. I think, first of all, it was the eloquence of the civil rights struggle that it had a very dynamic leader in the form of Dr. King. And I think that this country knew that it was wrong all along, but it needed someone who could summon the energies and pull us all together. And Dr. King did that, not only with African-Americans, but he did it with Jews, he did it with people who were not Christians, he did it with people who were poor, and his message went across the board. So therefore, because his message was all-inclusive, and it included people who had been excluded, women responded to Dr. King's message, because historically women know what it feels like to be excluded.
You have a beautiful family. You're also a leader in many aspects. You are a pastor of a church and a wonderful career. Altogether, you're a well-respected man in your community. Would you consider yourself as to accomplishing your goals in life?
Oh, no. I have many other goals, and all of the seats and that I occupy, hats that I wear, are part of my ministry. I believe that we have responsibility to make the world a little better. And, Ward, when you look around, you see the issues that confront us in this state. For instance, we have 400,000 illiterate adults in this state. That tells me we've all got to do something. We have drug abuse and all of this kind of thing. We have teen pregnancy. We have issues in this country where jobs are going overseas every day. We're losing employment opportunities. And there are just so many things that we have to do. And people such as myself, who are blessed with the support of the public and so forth, have a responsibility to get out there and try to make life better for people.
Could you name a few of your everyday duties
for your job? Certainly. Which one do you want to go with first?
It's up to you.
Okay. Well, let's just talk about here. Basically, I see all of my work as a pastor consistent. There are priestly responsibilities, which include preaching the gospel, which includes visiting the sick, marrying the young, and burying the dead. There are also social responsibilities, such as that which I assumed as a city councilman and president of the city council in the city of Talladega, to be able to communicate respect to all sides of town, to pave a street that has never been paved before, to provide law enforcement services for people who feel that because they call, nobody comes to their side of town, is a unique and blessed privilege that I have as far as working very hard to help the community develop a strategic plan that will take us all into the 21st century. In my work at AIDB, which includes that of being a behavior specialist, working with sensory impaired children is really a blessing because I can see some tangible results of that on a daily basis. I think a lot of the other things that I do, I cannot see the immediate result of it, such as, like I said, trying to develop a strategic plan for the city of Talladega to find out where we want to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and what it's going to take to be able to create the kind of economy where we can keep positive young men such as yourself and my sons, who will be finishing school pretty soon, in our community, where you won't have to leave Talladega in order to go and find a decent job and have a good life.
Do you consider yourself as a role model for the black, for black men?
I don't know about that. I hope that I provide a positive example. I try. And I try that by the way in which I treat my own family, by the way I treat people that are close to me, and the way I treat strangers. I think it is important for any of us who are black males today to be sensitive to the fact that there are some very negative energies out there of us. And it's not just that which is conjured up by other communities, but I think the media, I think movies, I think movies like The Color Purple, I have some real concerns about the movie Waiting to Exhale, tend to create some very negative images of black males, boys in the hood and those kinds of things create very negative images of black males for younger black males and for white people who maybe wonder if that's all we do is shoot up dope and shoot at each other and that kind of thing. So I do feel a sense of responsibility to try to operate in a way that I would be viewed as positive and being a contributor to the community rather than simply a consumer, always taking.
You've already touched on this, but the media exploits black males by saying they're down out. Do you believe this? And what is your view on black males in today's society?
Yeah, I think that black males have a very important function. There are some statistics that are very troubling. A large percentage of young black males are in prison. And there are, of course, some reasons for it apart from simply the fact that they break laws. But we have to consider that we live in a country where the folk who arrest people are predominantly white people. The people who decide what cases are prosecuted are predominantly white people. The judges who hear the case are predominantly white people. The recent issue about crack cocaine and powdered cocaine illustrate my point. Crack cocaine is basically used by blacks, and the penalties for it are very severe. Penalties are quite severe. But when you talk about powdered cocaine, which is used predominantly by white persons in this country, the penalties are not nearly as severe, and it's all dope. So I think the black male constantly finds himself victimized by the systemic kinds of things that confront him, as far as law enforcement and as far as education, as far as movies and all of this kind of thing. But we have a lot of very positive folk out there who are doing exciting and good and decent things every day. I do think we all have a responsibility to help emphasize those positive role models and to say to children that Michael Jordan is a great basketball player, but that's not your role model. Your role model is your daddy, who goes to work every day and struggles to try to take care of your family. Your role model is your uncle who's raising his family, who's there to lend you a hand, and that kind of thing. So I think that we do have a responsibility to point out the very positive things that black males are doing every day.
How do you see the world in 10 years?
Well, I think that it'll be a far different place than it is today. I think mass communications will do something about that. I think that we are growing, we are in the age of information. I think that the world I know, the South, is going to certainly change because of the textile industry will be going, and we've got to move toward more technology. So I think technology is going to make a very different world for us.
What advice would you be willing to give students that will in years to come listen to this interview?
I would tell them to, first of all, have a strong belief system in a spiritual power, a power bigger than yourself. Always believe that there is somebody out there who loves you, who is your God, who is greater than yourself. And let him guide you. Believe that you can make a contribution. Don't just try to get things. Try to make a contribution and things will come your way. Get a good education so that you are prepared to make a contribution. You can't provide the kind of contribution that you ought to provide without the educational tools to do it with. So I would say get an education, but also remember that you have a responsibility to make the world better.
Do you have any last words that you'd like to give? Well, that cover it?
I think that just about covers it. I think that I am a very blessed person personally to have lived through that period and to live now and to see the tremendous changes that are taking place and the greater changes that will confront us in the future.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking the time out to do this interview.
Always. Wish you the very best, Mike.